His statements were not too far-fetched. It did look as if the various peoples had been mixed up so that they might learn something from each other. In some cases, the alien groups had managed to create various social lubricants and live in relative amity. In other cases, there was a slaughter of one side by the other, or a mutual near-extermination, or slavery, of the defeated. For some time after the resurrection, anarchy had been the usual rule. People had milled around and formed little groups for defense in very small areas. Then the natural leaders and power-seekers had come to the front, and the natural followers had lined up behind the leaders of their choice, or the leader's choice in many cases. One of the several political systems that had resulted was that of Grail slavery. A dominant group in an area held the weaker prisoners. They gave the slave enough to eat because the grail of a dead slave became useless. But they took the cigarettes, the cigars, the marijuana, the dream gum, the liquor, and the tastier food. At least 30 times, the Haji had started to put into a grail stone and had come close to being seized by grail slavers. But Burton and the others were on the alert for signs of slave states. Neighboring states often warned them. 20 times boats had put out to intercept them instead of trying to lure them ashore, and the Haji had narrowly escaped being run down or boarded. 5 times Burton had been forced to turn back and sail downstream. His catamaran had always outrun the pursuers, who were reluctant to chase him outside their borders. Then the Haji had sneaked back at night and sailed past the slavers. A number of times the Haji had been unable to put into shore because the slave states occupied both banks for very long stretches. Then the crew went on half rations, or if they were lucky, caught enough fish to fill their bellies. The proto-Hamite Semites of this area had been friendly enough after they were assured that the crew of the Haji had no evil intentions. An 18th-century Muscovite had warned them that there were slave states on the other side of the channel. He didn't know too much about them because of the precipitous mountains. A few boats had sailed through the channel, and almost none had returned. Those that did brought news of evil men on the other side. So the Haji was loaded with bamboo shoots, dried fish, and supplies saved over a period of 2 weeks from the grails. There was still about half an hour before the strait would be entered. Burton kept half his mind on his sailing and half on the crew. They were sprawled on the foredeck, taking in the sun, or else sitting with their backs against the roofed combing, which they called the forecastle. John de Greystock was affixing the thin, carved bones of a hornfish to the butt of an arrow. The bones served quite well as feathers in a world where birds didn't exist. Greystock, or Lord Greystoke, as Frigate insisted on calling him for some private self-amusing reason, was a good man in a fight or when hard work was needed. He was an interesting, if almost unbelievably vulgar, talker, full of anecdotes of the campaigns in Gascony and on the border, of his conquests of women, of gossip about Edward Longshanks, and, of course, of information about his times. But he was also very hard-headed and narrow-minded in many things, from the viewpoint of a later age, and not overly clean. He claimed to have been very devout in earth life, and he probably told the truth. Otherwise he wouldn't have been honored by being attached to the retinue of the Patriarch of Jerusalem. But now that his faith had been discredited, he hated priests, and he was apt to drive any he met into a fury with his scorn, hoping that they would attack him. Some did, and he came close to killing them. Burton had cautiously reprimanded him for this. You didn't speak harshly to de Greystock unless you wished to fight to the death with him, pointing out that when they were guests in a strange land and immensely outnumbered by their hosts, they should act as guests. De Greystock admitted that Burton was right, but he couldn't keep from baiting every priest he met. Fortunately, they weren't often in areas where there were Christian priests. Moreover, there were very few of these who admitted that they had been such. Beside him, talking earnestly, was his current woman, born Mary Rutherford in 1637, died Lady Warwickshire in 1674. She was English, but of an age 300 years later than his, so there were many differences in their attitudes and actions. Burton didn't give them much longer to stay together. Kaz was sprawled out on the deck with his head in the lap of Fatima, a Turkish woman whom the Neanderthal had met 40 days ago during a lunch stop. Fatima, as Frigid had said, seemed to be hung up on hair. That was his explanation for the obsession of the 17th-century wife of a baker of Ankara for Kaz. She found everything about him stimulating, but it was the hairiness that sent her into ecstasies. Everybody was pleased about this, most of all Kaz. He hadn't seen a single female of his own species during their long trip, though he had heard about some. Most women shied away from him because of his hairy and brutish appearance. He had had no permanent female companionship until he met Fatima.